Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 5. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Leia. As always, I'm Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hey guys, how you doing?
We also have Ariana.
Hi.
And Danielle.
Hey!
Both joining us from Hypeable, guys. So, if you want to get involved in the conversation, please feel free to get a hold of us on Twitter at rradiopodcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, or send us a message through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. All right, as always, we have two brand new hosts who have not been on the show yet. So, Danielle, tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of your backstory with Star Wars.
Sure, I would love to. Hi, I'm Danielle. As Mikey said, I'm a writer for Hypeable. I have been a fan of Star Wars probably since I was about, let's say, maybe 7 or 8 years old. My first memory of it actually was we used to have a summer home in Wisconsin. And for some reason, my parents would like to go to our summer home in the winter when it was freezing cold and they refused to turn on like the heat and everything like that. So basically going up there in the winter was awful. And so one weekend we went up and we were all really bored. And my parents decided to take us to like the video rental store where for some reason they were showcasing the Star Wars movies. So they're like, well, let's show these to our like 8-year-old and 4-year-old. This is going to be great. So they brought it back and my brother and I were just kind of glued to the screen. I think we started with A New Hope. I really hope that we did. And ever since then, like, I've kind of gone in and out of the fandom. Obviously, when the prequels came out, I was inundated with everything, and so I was super into it. I've had, like, a Leia action figure. I've watched the movies more than I can count. And I never really got into the extended universe or anything, so I kind of went away from fandom up until now when everything started coming back. And so it's so exciting. I've been watching my VHS tapes like crazy. I still have my VCR. It's like in perfect working order. I grew up on the like first, not the original, but like the first edited versions of them. So those are the ones that I'm used to. And those are also the only ones that have never been put onto DVD or anything like that. So I can't get them anywhere. So I just have to keep relying on my VHS tapes and hope that they don't die. And if they do, I'll just buy some more on eBay or something. So that's me and my Star Wars in a nutshell.
Very cool. Very cool. And what about you, Ariana? Tell us about your history with Star Wars.
Well, unfortunately, my parents were not awesome geeks like everybody else's parents seems to be. So my first experience was really like going to go see Phantom Menace. And I remember my brother and I just absolutely loved it. And I really like wanted a pink lightsaber, but they didn't have any, obviously. I really enjoyed the prequels. I know that's terrible because they're like awful, but I remember like loving them. And I didn't get really into the original ones until like college, because I think that's like when I first saw them, when my friend showed me. And yeah, but I did go to a Jesuit university. And since the Jedis are based on the Jesuits, I pretty much like graduated from a Jedi Academy. So I have that going for me.
Now I'm a little jealous, I will be honest there.
You are too cool, I swear.
Way too cool.
All right. Well, moving into our first bit of news, we have quite a bit of news actually this week. I was a little surprised. StarWars.com has just released their This Is Madness, which will actually be starting on March 14th. For those of you who don't know what this is based on the NCAA college basketball tournament that takes place here in March in the U.S. And basically what it does is there's a bracket of college teams, in this case, are the Star Wars one, is the bracket of Star Wars characters. And this one should be pretty unique. Over the past couple years, it's been mostly characters from the original films and prequels, and then also a few characters who've made it in from the Clone Wars series, like Rex was on there 1 year. And now, this year, we have characters from both Rebels and The Force Awakens. We'll link that in our show notes for everyone to take a look at the bracket and where you can enter. But what do you guys think? We were talking about this a little bit earlier. We have some interesting pair-ups. You know, we have Yoda versus Finn. That's an interesting pair-up myself, because unfortunately, as much as I love Finn, I will have to vote for Yoda myself.
I might have to vote for Finn. I'm sorry.
That's fine. You just don't like green people.
We're going to throw down, Mikey.
You know, hey, it's all right. Judge me by your size, do not. But yeah, so there's some interesting pair-ups. What do you guys think about some of these that we're looking at here?
I mean, I think that some of them are really hard in theory. Like, I think the Leia and Poe one in theory is really hard, but I feel like it's going to easily go to Leia, just because as much as we love Poe, and even like the Yoda-Finn one, we love Finn, I feel like they're too new, and people have had, like, you know, 30 years to like fall in love with Yoda and Leia.
I don't know. I mean, Poe has basically become everyone's internet space boyfriend.
He is like a big internet thing. I feel like in the like general world, it's like, oh yeah, I like Poe, but they're not like obsessed with him like the internet is.
Yeah, and you know, there's some interesting pair-ups. Like, there's also Ahsoka Tano, who made it really far when she was there from the Clone Wars series, but she's paired up against BB-8. And I think, as much as I love Ahsoka, I feel like BB-8's going to take that one pretty easily. But Leia versus Poe is probably a little bit more difficult, because you're right, I think the internet loves Poe, but, you know, Leia has also been around for 30 years. So it's definitely an interesting pair-up there. We also have some weird Imperials dark side pair-ups. We have Count Dooku versus Phasma. And in all honesty, I don't know if either character has that many hardcore fans to vote for one or the other.
No, so, not at all.
So I feel like that will be just kind of a throw up in the air.
Yeah, looking on this side, I'm like, how many of these people are hardcore fans for them? Like Seven Sister and Jabba the Hutt. Ooh.
Well, in all honesty, Seven Sister and Jabba the Hutt, like, I don't know who I would vote for. Like, I really like Seven Sister and Rebels. But, you know, like, Boba Fett versus General Hux, as much as I thought General Hux was kind of an interesting character in The Force Awakens, it's not really a battle there. Boba Fett's going to win, hands down.
Boba Fett's going to go pretty much all the way through.
I don't know. Probably. But then he's going to have to go against, you know, Palpatine and Maul and Vader and Jango Fett. And, well, Jango Fett will probably lose to Kylo Ren, I think. I don't know. You know, Kylo Ren was pretty cool. He's also a radar tech, too, so.
If Matt the radar technician was in there, I would probably vote for him over Kylo Ren.
Oh, he would make it all the way. He would win.
So This Is Madness is
I really
back.
Feel, though, like Han has to win, because he died. This year.
But you know what? Chewie, everyone loves Chewie. You know, he just goes like nonstop, and it's like, oh yeah, I understand what he's saying. I don't know.
If Chewie doesn't win, he'll like rip your arms off. I mean, let the Wookiee win.
Exactly. So yeah, so this will be fun to watch over every week. And for those of you who don't know how it actually works, I'm sure there's more information on the website. But basically the way it is every week they open it up for you to vote for your favorites for that week. This week, starting on the 14th, we'll have the most people to vote for. And then next week it'll be who moves on to the next bracket, all the way up to who is the favorite Star Wars character of 2016. For This Is Madness. Now, also from their website, make sure you scroll down. There is a link through the Star Wars Wikipedia, and there is a contest where you can win some stuff if you actually predict the madness correctly. They actually say, I really like it, they predict the madness and win much more than a quarter portion, which, again, playing on Force Awakens. But you can get some pretty cool stuff from action figures to Star Wars headphones. I really like that they're giving away the Boba Fett Star Wars headphones, the over-the-ear ones. And just a bunch of different things. They're also giving away the Droid Tales Lego DVD that we talked about last week on show. So it'd be something fun to play with every week and just to talk about it.
Yeah, Oh yeah, definitely. I'm trying to find the contest rules for for joining this though, and basically getting involved.
And Donna, you can just use my address if needed. Don't worry. You live in the U.S. now. You can join in.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll never see any of the prizes. You'll run away with them.
Probably.
Wait. The contest is open only to individuals who are legally residing in the United States, Canada, excluding Quebec, or the United Kingdom. Oh!
There you go!
Yay! There you go. There you go, Dania. You can submit your choices.
I can, and I am. I am going to. This doesn't happen very often.
you're gonna have to tell us how well you do then.
I will.
All right. Moving on this week, we also saw a fan film. I know we talked about the Star Wars fan film contest that was coming up a couple weeks ago, but a new fan film that has just kind of hit YouTube. It's hit over 4 million views in the last week, really. It was released about 5 days ago. It's called Darth Maul Apprentice. It's 17 minutes, so it's a little bit long for a fan film. But basically, the way it does is it follows the actions of Darth Maul in, I'm assuming, training on some planet. Doesn't really elaborate that much. And some Jedi are happening to be scouting the planet. And, of course, he can't let the Jedi know that he's there. So, for 17 minutes, there's a battle between Jedi and Darth Maul. It's very well done, and some of the comments are saying that it's better choreographed than The Force Awakens. What do you guys think about this?
Mikey and I actually had a very quick discussion about this prior to recording, where I will actually disagree, not saying that the choreography of this little fan film isn't amazing. It is. It's phenomenal. Like, it's so well done. It's beautiful. You can tell a lot of hard work and time and effort has been put into getting this to look really, really good. But that, for me, is where the problem is because it is so polished, it's so clean, it's really beautiful. And unfortunately, real fighting isn't like that. It's not beautiful. It's the same problems I have with a lot of the prequel films as well, is that a lot of the actual fights are so beautifully done and beautifully choreographed that it's more like a dance than it is an actual fight. There's very little tension or build up or actual peril, and fighting is so scrappy and so dangerous, and as someone who has fought professionally doing like judo, it's not always pretty. It's just not. That's just the simple baseline of it. So I would disagree on the basis that in The Force Awakens, at least, it's not overly choreographed. When you see like Rey going up against Kylo, and you also see Finn going up against Kylo, like neither of them are like really, really adept at what they're doing. And you see a lot of, especially with Rey, her retreating a lot and going on the defensive and kind of just trying to get the upper hand any way she can. And for me, that feels a little bit more natural, a little bit more realistic in respect to an actual fight than when it's really beautifully choreographed. And that's not to take away from what these guys have done, because it's really great work. It really is. You can tell that a lot of thought has been put into it. But on the basis of saying it's better than The Force Awakens, I mean, when you look at it in respect to fighting, not for me, anyway. That's my personal opinion. I don't know if anyone feels differently about it or not.
I think I would agree with you on that. I actually didn't have a chance to watch it, so I've been just kind of eyeing it while I'm listening to you. And the one thing that I don't really like in choreographed fights is when the people who are fighting take extra time to do a bunch of like flips and turns. And it's like, well, no, you're kind of fighting because you're in danger. And while it's beautiful in this, and I love the way that this looks, I feel like it has a lot of that, which kind of takes the urgency away for me.
But what you guys are missing is how cool those spins and flips look. Like, it looks really cool, yeah, right?
It does look really cool.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Mikey on this one. I'm watching it right now, too, because I hadn't seen it before. And I'm like, this is amazing. Like, I can't believe this isn't, like, like a real film. Like, this is crazy. But like, I think also you have to distinguish the difference between, well, right now I'm not doing this with sound, but I'm assuming they're all like trained Jedi. Is that correct?
Yeah.
The people in the fan film.
Yeah. What you get through is it basically looks like there's, you know, the synopsis, there's not much dialogue in the film because it is mostly fighting, is that these Jedi are looking or scouting a planet and they find some signal and they happen upon Darth Maul.
They're like, yeah, so they're trained Jedi, so they're supposed to look more polished versus like Rey and Finn. They like, I mean, like, sure, Finn had some training, but he's like a stormtrooper. So I think that it, I don't mind that they look more polished and more graceful.
Yeah, and they do, and you know, really this kind of, you know, especially with Darth Maul, it is choreographed. It looks kind of like the Phantom Menace, you know, the fight between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and Darth Maul. Like, it is that very polished, lot of flourish, you know, it's like you would expect someone who had martial arts training like Ray Parks did, who was Darth Maul. So it definitely looks like that. You know, the comments on the YouTube, you know, like I said, they said it's better choreographed, and I think that might be true. It is better choreographed. It's like a dance more so than a fight. And I agree, a lot of fights, especially when you look at The Force Awakens, you know, the fight between Finn and Kylo Ren and Rey and Kylo Ren, those are purely raw fighting for survival type instincts. So it's not as pretty. It's not flashy and spin around and stuff like that. It really is, you know, a fight to the death to live. Whereas this is, even though they're fighting and the Jedi die, sorry, I gave away the spoiler in the film. But it's really more a choreographed dance, and it just looks really cool. I would definitely encourage everyone to take a look at it. But yeah, it was a really well done. I hope this, whoever created it, I don't have all the information in front of me, but I really hope they submit this to the Star Wars Fan Film Awards. Sean Boo is the one who directed it, and you can follow him on Instagram, Sean_Boo. There you go. All right. Any other things about Darth Maul Apprentice? I know you guys were just watching it. Anything that piqued your interest? Okay, moving on.
No, it was okay. Really good.
Okay, moving on.
Sorry,
okay.
I know.
That's fine. I'm waiting.
Still just watching it.
Okay. You know, I will say there's one thing. Speaking of Rey and Finn, Rey fighting Kylo Ren with it, there's a scene about 8 minutes in, 7 minutes and 50 seconds. Yeah, I paused it there. Where there's these kind of, they're in this kind of canyon. It totally reminds me of Rey and Kylo Ren on Taco Donna.
Oh, yeah. Like that's where I am right now.
Yeah, like it so, really looks yeah. like it. And so I'm almost wondering if this was planned after The Force Awakens came out and they saw that and they're like, oh, this is really cool, and they decided to do it. Like, and they found this location to do it in there, or if it just happened to be similar looking to it. But it really looks like those type of, you know, that type of location between the, on that kind of the canyon place. I don't know. There's rocks on the side. Okay. Well, moving on. Last week we talked about The Force Awakens coming home, and we talked about all the wonderful different special editions that were going to be available. And I had pre-ordered my Target exclusive Star Wars Force Awakens Blu-ray with 20 minutes of extra footage. But we have just found out recently, at least a report from Twitter, from Yakface, who tends to drop a lot of Star Wars kind of tidbits as they come out. Basically, this 20 minutes of bonus footage is going to be a digital download. It's not actually in the packaging or anything, which kind of leads to what I said last week of, oh, if you don't get it, it's not a big deal. It'll show up on YouTube probably the day it's released. And I think that's what's probably going to happen with these 20 minutes of bonus footage. What do you guys think of it not being on the disc and not part of the packaging, but an actual digital download you have to get?
I wish I could say I'm surprised. I actually usually do pre-order most of my movies through Target because they either like give you a free gift card or they do have like extra stuff. And recently they have started not having extra discs and having digital downloads. I think the first one I might have noticed it on was maybe Ultron. And I understand, I guess it lowers the cost of production because they don't have to put another disc in there. But at the same time, if I'm going through and like making a point of watching things, I usually do it through my Blu-ray player and my TV, not my computer. So then I would have to pick up another screen and look at the footage And I don't know. And yeah, like you said, it's not going to stay exclusive for long because that's just how the internet works. So I don't know. Not a huge fan. I probably still will pre-order it from Target, but I don't know.
I'm not going to get too upset about this because we weren't getting that anyway over here. So, but it does kind of suck for people who are specifically seeking out stuff like a Target exclusive. And this is like a big draw for why you should go for Target's disc or Target's version over someone else's. The fact that it's a digital download and is going to be a lot easier to redistribute and put back out online into the wild onto YouTube and all sorts, you know, it kind of sucks for people who probably already pre-ordered through Target. But selfishly, I'm not too upset because it means I'll probably get to see this now, because it's not included on any of the UK versions at all. So
yeah, this kind of makes me almost regret ordering through Target. Now, you mentioned that they did give me a $5 gift card to Target. And since I have a Target credit card, I also saved an additional 5% on it. So I'm not really upset because I got a good deal. But I may have actually went with the Best Buy one just because it's the metal casing, which I thought would have been really cool to have like a really nice fancy box for it. But then there was the BB-8 one. See, there's too many options. Now like, this was the reason to get the Target. This was the reason to get the Target one. Now I'm kind of like, meh. Oh, well. But yeah, so it definitely looks like they're going to be releasing it through their, Disney Movies Anywhere, which I've never used that. So another thing to sign up for.
Yeah, that's the other problem with this is that you have to sign up through like a special service. And you have to go through that particular service. And in this case, it's Disney, which is just an added hassle to it. But I mean, it's still in my browser on my like to buy list. So I'm still going to get it anyway. But oh, well.
Oh, well, that's how it is. But yeah, so the Target one, you still get 20 extra minutes, but it's going to be digital download, not on a disc. Moving on, we also got some news from Bob Iger the other day. He confirmed that Chewbacca will join Han in the Han Solo anthology movie. He did mention that they have, to quote him, "We have others in the works, including one which is an origin story about Han Solo and Chewie." And he continued on that will come after Star Wars Episode 8 in 2018. So we'll see a Han Solo and a Chewbacca film coming in, I guess, 2018? 2019? No, 2019.
I would say 2019.
Yeah, because he said 2018 is Star Wars 8, so 2019, the next year, it would be that film. So, yeah, so that's kind of cool. Like, I'm wondering, is it going to be the origin story of them, like, meeting? Because there's so much written about, like, those two together and the Wookiee life debt and all this stuff, but that's all in the expanded universe, which has been kind of wiped clean. So what do you guys think?
Life day.
Yeah, life debt, life day. Yeah.
Life day.
Yeah, you know, the Star Wars holiday special. Yeah, but what do you guys think about this? Like, what can you imagine, like, what they're going to do? How is Han and Chewie going to meet?
So, do we know definitely it's, like, them meeting? Is that what they've...
Well, yeah, he said it's going to be, which is an origin story about Han Solo and Chewie. So, I don't know if it's even going to be an origin of them meeting each other, or the origin of them, like, getting the Millennium Falcon... Or if, like, one day Han Solo trips over Chewie's big foot and says, "Watch it, fuzzball," and they start becoming best buds, you know? So who knows? But yeah.
I'm pretty excited to find out because I don't know why. I just assumed that the Han Solo prequel was going to be, like, just about Han. And I was like, I mean, as much as I love Han, I wasn't super excited. But now that I know that Chewie's in it, like, that makes it way more exciting for me.
I
totally agree.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I wanted to revolve around them getting the Millennium Falcon, because we know, based on the films, that they got the Millennium Falcon from Lando Calrissian through a card game.
Young Lando? Oh my gosh.
Exactly, right?
I'm really excited.
How cool would a young Lando be? Like, and you gotta remember, they got it through, like, a high-stakes card game. Like, this is gonna be, like, Rat Pack style, Ocean's 11, smuggler style. Like, it's gonna be, like, I'm really pumped about this, if you can't tell. But, like, I can just totally see, like, young Lando being in there, Han, Chewie, you know, maybe a Greedo or two if we don't know who, you know, he didn't get shot yet. So it'd be kind of cool to see this film.
But,
I know.
But what if this high stakes card game takes place at Takodana at Maz's castle?
And that's where Han borrows the money from Maz. You know, you just never know. Just all ties together. Prequel, you know, before the prequels, everything, right? Wow, mind blown. Thank you.
We should write these movies.
Okay. We should. Disney, hire us now.
Trademarked there. But yeah, you know, this should be kind of fun. I'm just glad that they're going to go ahead and experiment with this. I know I read on the internet, especially in Reddit, people were like, Han Solo film is going to be horrible because it's not going to have Harrison Ford. What do you guys think of having to cast someone else as a young Han Solo?
I mean, they've already got, like, the perfect person to play a young Han Solo, and he's already played a young Harrison Ford in another movie. If they don't get Antony and Gruber to play a young Han Solo, then they're crazy. Because if anyone saw Age of Adeline, and if anyone has seen his impression of Han Solo on YouTube, it is uncanny, absolutely uncanny how much he looks and sounds and has the mannerisms down. Like,
say this man's name again. Who is this?
Antony Ingruber. He has a YouTube channel. He does a lot of impressions. And he has played Harrison Ford, a younger Harrison Ford, in Age of Adeline. So, he's already there. He's already there.
How do you spell his name? I'm looking at Age of Adeline, and I cannot find him. But I didn't know Harrison Ford was in that.
Yeah, he was. Here we go. I'm just pulling up the YouTube video of him doing his Han Solo impression.
Han is tricky because, like, such a big part of what made Han great was the fact that, like, Harrison Ford, like, was Han. He was, like, not into Star Wars the same way Han wasn't. So that's what makes him so hard. Thanks, Donnie. I'm going to go watch this now.
Yeah, I think there might need to be a pause where we all watch this and we can talk about it. And this will probably be linked in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll definitely link this in the show notes for you guys. Don't worry. But if you haven't seen this, like, you have to watch it because he is basically Han Solo, but younger.
Holy fuck, Donnie. He looks just like him. This is crazy.
What can I say?
This is absurd.
Well, there we go. We just got a preview of the film coming in 2019 there. Wow. Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah. And the thing is I would prefer them to go with someone like Antony Ingruber, who is still, for the most part, relatively unknown. This video went around on social media a bit. It's kind of more like an underground thing, if you picked up on it or not, but, like, to the point where he actually got hired for Age of Adeline as young Harrison Ford because of how much he was like him. And I think it would be better for them to go with someone more relatively unknown than going with, like, one of the hot ticket actors that is kind of out there, like, now, like, who is on
Shia LaBeouf?
And, like, who else was on that short list? Like, Miles Teller and stuff? Like, no.
Yeah, no. No,
oh my God.
You.
Miles Teller is such a pretentious ass. No. Yeah.
I don't want to see Miles Teller or anyone. I really do think that, much like they did with, like, Daisy Ridley and with John Boyega and Oscar Isaac to an extent, even though Oscar Isaac had more roles than, like, John Boyega and Daisy Ridley, like, someone more unknown who doesn't have a lot of stuff prior to this that people can, like,
yeah,
like, they're not typecast. They don't have, like, other roles that people will be like, oh, it's that guy from such and such. I think he's so good.
Well, I think also what makes those three, like, work so well, I think, is that they seem so grateful just to be there. And as a Star Wars fan, you want them to be grateful, obviously. And I feel like Miles Teller would not have the same level of gratitude.
Oh my God, yeah. Not at all.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put this out there right now. I even though you want someone unknown in some of these roles, I personally would love Donald Glover as a young Lando Calrissian.
Ooh. That's an interesting choice.
Just because, like, I could totally see him pulling it off. You know, he's still young. He's, you know, he's a little bit older than what I think they are going for. But I think he'd be, like, the perfect one because he can play such a wide range of characters. And I think for Lando, remember, Lando's kind of cheesy almost. And if you watch
him, that sense of humor.
Yeah, if you watch him in, like, Community, he's definitely, like, I can see that. Like, I remember him seeing him in Martian, the Martian, and, like, he played like this. He came up with, like, the weirdest, like, the plan and everything, and, like, who is this kid? It's like, no, this is what it's going to be. I'm right. Like, and that's, like, Lando for me. I don't know. But I definitely think he'd be a great Lando. I'm going to just say it now. 3 years out.
Can you just imagine Donald Glover like swinging that cape around? Like,
like he would wear the cape to like premieres. You realize like he would probably never take a cape off afterwards.
Oh no!
And he would just be like, "Hello, what have we here? I'm Lando Calrissian, Colt 45." Like it'd be just like everything you can think of Lando. Like he would just be like, I could just imagine him walking around with a cape at everything that he does from going forward after he becomes Lando. Like it would be amazing. But yeah, that's just my opinion, and I could probably be wrong, and I'll probably be wrong, but I would love it.
It would be pretty great. But I think for someone like Han, like I just pulled up the shortlist again, and the shortlist, the reported or rumored shortlist, is Miles Teller, Ansel Elgort, Dave Franco, Jack Rayner, Scott Eastwood, Logan Lerman, Emery Cohen, and Blake Jenner. That's the current reported shortlist. And
I don't like those people.
No, for me, not a single one of them has that same presence, I think. And that's so much of what Han is, even though he blusters a lot and he's not as smooth as he likes to think he is, like he still has a very specific presence on screen. And honestly, I don't think any of those guys have the same kind of presence. That's not to say that they're not good actors in their own right, but for me, none of them really click for Han Solo for me. But I guess only time will tell.
Yeah, we'll see what they end up doing. Like, here's the thing. Disney owns Lucasfilm, and they did a great job with the whole Marvel universe. There are some things I'm not 100% happy with, like the lack of communication between television and film. You know, since TV keeps going and the films are only so often, but I definitely think they're doing the same thing with Star Wars, where I trust them and to be able to make the right choices for a lot of these things.
Yeah, I think I'm not.
Tanya doesn't sound convinced.
It's mostly because in terms of casting, when you put it in the Marvel universe, I mean, Danielle will vouch for the fact that she listens to Hero Hype. She knows I'm not happy with some of the casting choices that Marvel and Disney have made for some of the movies. So for me personally, they don't always get it right. But I mean, at the end of the day, we'd have to just accept whoever they choose anyway. It's not like we can change it. So I'm really, really, really hoping that they go with Anthony and Gruber. Like, a lot. That'll probably set me up for disappointment, but he's just too good, guys. He's just too good.
Alrighty. Well, moving on to Rogue One. We still don't have an official trailer released yet. But this week, a leaked trailer was released. And, of course, it was taken down right away. But there's still one up there. Basically, it's embedded in someone else's analysis of it. So you can still watch it. It's in the first 30 seconds of it. There's some interesting things in the trailer. It's very similar to the trailer that was released over a year ago at a Star Wars Celebration 2015 in Anaheim. But I don't know. What do you guys think? Is it fake? Is it real? Have you had a chance to look at it?
I had a chance to look at it. It's not particularly long. It It's kind of difficult to tell. I mean, if it is real, then it's definitely a very early, early version of this teaser trailer, because there's not a lot of texturing done on, like, there's a TIE fighter in there, and the texturing is, like, pretty much missing from the looks of it. So it's a very, very early cut without, like, everything on top of it, if that is the case. There are some things in there that would suggest potentially that it is real, but I don't know. If it is, it's a very, very, very early version of it. It's honestly, all in, it's kind of underwhelming as a teaser. So if it is the teaser for Rogue One, I would hope that we'd get a little bit more, because it's just kind of like, eh?
My thoughts exactly. Eh. Like, it's fine, but yeah.
It's interesting, because the teaser that has supposedly leaked, of course it's handheld footage, you know, camera phone footage for, you know, on something that they're filming it from. It's not much different from what we saw a year ago, you know, at the Celebration trailer. So you'd think they'd probably do something more for an official teaser that they're going to release. I will say it is kind of cool to see the silhouettes of, like, the AT-ATs and stuff. But really, it's just kind of like, I don't know, like, there's no story, there's no context other than showing the Death Star at the end, which is what we saw, you know, over a year ago, really. But it definitely, you know, there's enough things in there, like specifically the file format, the MXF format, that is a deliverable format for broadcast and distribution. That's something that you use in Avid, Premiere Pro, Final Cut can all use those formats. But it just, it's really short for something to be seen first, and there's not anything that ties it together. You know, we were talking about this earlier, Danya. We mentioned when we saw the initial teaser on Black Friday of The Force Awakens, you know, there were some shocking things. You know, we saw BB-8, we saw Finn, we saw Rey, and then we saw the Millennium Falcon. Like, that, and, you know, we didn't see the original tree, we didn't see, you know, Han or Leia or Chewie or any of that, but we did see the Falcon, and so that tied it back to everything else. Here we see the Death Star, which is not really the same. Like, to me, the Death Star doesn't hold the same place in my heart as the Millennium Falcon. So I don't know if this is real or not.
I would just say that I would think that they would want to put at least a little bit more, not effort, because obviously, like, people work very hard on these sorts of things, but if it's going to be shown in front of Batman versus Superman, which is what it seems like in this thing that we're trying to decide if it's real, I would think that they would want to put a little bit more in there, because nobody, or not a lot of people, are aware of Rogue One. So you want to get them excited. And I don't think that this teaser would be something that would do that.
Yeah. I mean, same is what I was saying to Mikey a little bit earlier about this, was that with The Force Awakens, you had so much going for it that linked it into the Star Wars mythology. Like, you had hugely iconic characters and items and ships that really established the fact that this is a Star Wars film. Now, the worrying thing for me about Rogue One, not necessarily that we don't get anything iconic, because we see a TIE fighter, we see the AT-ATs, we see the Death Star, which, as vehicles and, you know, everything, they're iconic, yes, but the link isn't strong enough to really be able to push this as a Star Wars story. Like, it was easier to push The Force Awakens and get people on board with it because it had such strong ties back to the franchise. But Rogue One, we've got less of that for a film that arguably isn't going to be as easy to get people to, because it's not in this sort of linear storyline of what we've seen of Star Wars so far. So it's going to be a lot more difficult to get people to the cinema to see this, because it doesn't happen chronologically. Like, it's not part of that straight through narrative. It's jumping backwards and happening between two other movies, and it's going to be a lot harder to get people to go to it. So the fact that we haven't had much to kind of tease Rogue One out to people is not worrying necessarily, but a little disappointing, because it was a whole year before The Force Awakens came out when we started seeing, like, trailers. And we're coming up to, like, a few months. Like, it's just about, what are we now, in March? It comes out in December, and we still don't have a trailer.
I don't know. For me, that doesn't worry me too much, but maybe because to me I'm like, oh, December seems so far away. Because it's coming out in December, right?
Yeah.
But yes. I feel like they probably, like, to me, The Force Awakens just came out. And I feel like they maybe want to disassociate from that so that you're not like, oh, it's the next one. It's like, no, this is separate. So maybe they're trying to keep that separation.
And that's what my thought was, because here's the weird part is we already saw an episode 8 teaser, and that's 2 years away. You know, the whole production start of episode 8, we saw that, and that was officially released and stuff. They haven't officially released anything for Rogue One. Now, my theory behind this is they definitely want to wait till after Force Awakens is at home. People have it already. And then beyond that, then they'll release it. And I think they're going to just do something completely out of the ordinary. I think they're going to focus on the villains in the film. Just because we've heard rumors of Darth Vader just being a total, you know, badass in it. You know, pulling stormtroopers with the Force as human shields and throwing his lightsaber and decapitating people. So I feel like they might focus on the villains, because Darth Vader is such an iconic character that it would be kind of amazing to see, even as a Star Wars story, to tie it into the original trilogy that way, with that character. Even though the story is actually going to be following the Rebels stealing the plans, they can focus on, I think, that character. But I really hope they have something to kind of tie it in and show people that this is not the chronological Star Wars saga. This is something brand new, a Star Wars story. And really, looking at that trailer, if you went back and watched the video, anyone, I feel like because it says a Star Wars anthology film, they've rebranded that, you know, since the original teaser they made back at a Celebration to a Rogue One, a Star Wars story. So I definitely feel like this is either very old and it never made it anywhere, or it's completely fake.
Yeah, that was the other thing that kind of stood out, is that, yeah, they've dropped the anthology thing. They're still, I think in some places, they will still refer to it as, like, an anthology movie, but they are really pushing for, like, Star Wars story for a lot of these. And, yeah, it's an interlude to, like, the chronological storyline of, like, Star Wars in its little set trilogies that we've got. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this is real or if it's not real, but I hope that we get something more soon, because I would really like to get a better idea of what to expect from it when it comes out, when it's coming out in December. Like, I really, really, really want to know more. And especially because it's going to be based around the Rebel Alliance and the Rebels. Like, I always really loved and wanted to learn more about them in the actual movies, and like the X-Wing pilots and so on. Like, I absolutely love the X-Wing pilots, so I do want to know a little bit more and a little bit about, like, what their sort of mission is and all sorts. But I don't know, I just hope we get something more soon, because yeah, December really is not that far away, which is terrifying.
You know, and the other thing that kind of worries me a little bit is we've had Rogue One, you know, Rogue Squadron has always been tied to the X-Wing pilots, like you mentioned. I don't know if this is going to be about X-Wing pilots at all. You know, it really follows, you know, the synopsis that they had, I have to go back to StarWars.com, is, you know, a band of rebels steal the Death Star plans before A New Hope. That's like what the synopsis is. Are they X-Wing pilots or are they not? They did show some Rogue One footage at a Disney shareholders meeting. Of course, that footage is not available, but Slash Film had a description of it. Basically, there's a shot of new stormtroopers again in black armor, supposedly called Death Troopers. That was announced a while ago, or leaked a while ago. And then also another trooper in all silver armor, very reminiscent of Captain Phasma. So that should be interesting to kind of see how some of those different stormtroopers we've never seen before are tied into this. From what I remember about the Death Trooper story that was released, was basically they were Darth Vader's private guard, kind of like the Red Imperial Guard were the Emperor's Guard. The black one, you know, the black stormtroopers, Death Troopers, are Vader's private guard. So that'd be kind of cool to see how they interact with everyone. But we'll wait and see. Hopefully we'll have some Rogue One news soon.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Here's hoping. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. So I think we should stay on target.
Stay on target. We're too close. Stay on target.
And move to our spotlight topic of Leia Organa. So here's what's interesting, just before we get started on anything else. So our spotlight topic is Leia, Princess Leia, General Leia, Senator Leia. In the books, in the extended universe, when she married Han and had kids, she became Leia Organa Solo. And before we started this episode, I went and did a whole bunch of research, and so did Danya, just to double check to make sure we weren't making it up. But nowhere in the new books since The Force Awakens is she referred to as Leia Organa Solo. It's General Organa. And it makes sense, because, you know, in Return of the Jedi, we had General Solo, which was Han. Now we have General Organa, which is Leia. But I'm a little sad about that. I'm not for saying you have to take someone's name. I'm not getting that deep into it. It's just, you know, it was just years of Han and Leia together. She became Solo, and now it's Organa.
Now she's literally Solo, so...
Oh no.
So sad.
I mean, I kind of think that it makes a lot of sense that she sticks with Organa as her name without adding Solo to it, because there's so much legacy to the name Organa and who they are and what they stand for, like her parents, her legacy from Alderaan. So, you know, having that name, having that clout behind her would obviously help when she, you know, works in the Senate and when she becomes a leader and so on. So it makes sense that separately, even when they got married, that Han kept his name and Leia kept hers. Like, it, to me, it makes sense. They don't necessarily need to take each other's names.
It totally makes sense for her character. And like you said, Danya, I mean, her parents are dead and like her planet is gone. So it makes sense that she would want to keep that legacy alive in some way.
I haven't thought about this at all until we started to write about this being the spotlight topic. But what do you guys think about if Ben, what was his last name? Did he take Solo? Did he take Organa? You know, what do you guys think what they would have had him use? Or would he have been like Organa Dats of a hyphen? You know, Organa Solo? You know, they hyphenated his name.
That's why he's so angry.
That's why he's so angry.
The hyphen caused so many problems.
You know, so, well, and I'm just thinking about this right now because, yeah, nowhere in the book since, you know, again, the extended universe had her take Solo. You know, she was Organa Solo and she'd be Leia Solo. And I think a lot of us just assumed he, you know, Kylo Ren was Ben Solo. But nowhere did Leia take Han's last name, and maybe they don't even take that last names in, you know, the Star Wars universe. You know, that was all something that was in the extended universe, so we just don't really
maybe
know.
Maybe they let him choose his own because they were such new age parents.
Well, that was a long time ago, so I don't know. Yeah, maybe they let him choose his own, and that's why he ended up choosing a name like Kylo.
I just flicked through a couple of the books that I have on my iBooks and a little bit on the Star Wars Wikipedia, but nowhere does it refer to whatever Ben has as his surname, just that he's referred to as Ben. That's it. And I'm thinking,
really?
I'm thinking,
that is interesting.
I'm thinking
all of us went to Ben Solo, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is that even in The Force Awakens, they call him Ben. They don't ever reference his surname at all. So, and I think a lot of people online have used Ben Solo when they're thinking about it. So,
you know what? I think it might have been because the reveal of Kylo Ren being Han and Leia's daughter was actually, or
daughter.
Han and Leia's son, sorry. His long hair, his long, his, all right, I'm sorry. EU, Jaina, Jason, I'm sorry, I'm going to stop there. But, you know, the reveal of him being Han and Leia's son was actually through Snoke. Snoke's the one who said it. Like, you know, your father, Han Solo. Like, I think that might have been where we got the whole thing, and then we got his name, Ben, later on. So I don't know why we all went to Solo. Like, I did instantly, and when I was looking this up, like I said, I'm like, huh, how come he didn't choose Organa or, you know, even Skywalker of all things? Because he could be considered Ben Skywalker, because, again, Organa is an adopted name for Leia. That's not her real name. Or Padme, you know, Amidala. You know, like, I don't know. Okay, I'm going to stop with the names. I'm getting confusing myself now. Anyway.
I mean, he could have gone Skywalker for a little bit, but at the same time, I think that he might have wanted to drop that one if he did take it, because my thinking is that he reveres Darth Vader and thinks of Darth Vader as, like, weak when he went back to Anakin Skywalker, so maybe he would want to distance himself from that last name, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense to me as well. But it's interesting that everyone has automatically assumed that Ben's surname would be Solo when there's nothing to necessarily back that up. That's interesting to me.
Okay. Well, going back to Leia, she started out as a princess. She was an adopted princess of Alderaan. Her parents were Bail and Breha Organa. And, you know, as a princess, we saw her in only do a few things. We saw her as a princess in the beginning of A New Hope, right? On the tentative, you know, he called her princess. And then she said it was a diplomatic mission. She kind of changed to senator. But she was also in Rebels as a princess, but she was already working for the Rebel Alliance, kind of, you know. So she was kind of a badass princess, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't
badass
know.
Badass princess is like one way of putting it.
Yep, fact. I have no exactly. objections to that.
I don't know. I'm just going off.
Continue on.
It.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But what if she was like raised by Anakin instead of, or Anakin and Padme instead of like Bail and Breha? You know, would she have been different? You guys think? Or
this is my favorite thing to contemplate, because for me, Leia, like, I remember watching it a few months ago, watching A New Hope again, and that scene where she's just standing there with her dad, and he blows up her planet, and everybody he's ever loved, and she's just kind of like, well, I guess that's that. Like, she's so, I don't know, because I was sitting there with my friends, and I'm like, is she a psychopath? She's like a little bit of a psychopath, right? And I really get the sense from her that she has a little bit of the darkness to her, and that because she is kind of, she's a lot darker than Luke, I think. And it's interesting to me to imagine what she would have been like if she had been raised by Anakin, who was also, you know, prone to kind of go dark, versus Bail and Breha, who are like peace and love. So
I think not necessarily that she's more inclined to the dark side. I think the way that she was brought up, the way that she saw the Empire rise, the way that she saw everything happening, that it made her more able to disassociate and be able to see what is necessary in order to get the outcome that you need. Like, I think that she's more willing to do what is necessary rather than what is always right. And I think she operates very much in this very interesting shade of gray rather than all the way on the light or all the way on the dark. I think that's what's really fascinating to me about Leia just in general is, is... Yeah, it's just that she will do whatever is necessary in order to achieve a goal. So, yeah.
She is very, like, single-mindedly focused.
Yeah.
You're right. Like, yeah.
I think she's more of a realist. It's interesting that you brought that she just stood there while her planet was destroyed. That's talked about in the Princess Leia comics.
Yes.
Yeah, you read those too, Danya?
I I got the first issue and I've been trying to get the other ones, but I've been waiting for the trade and then whatever. I think I'm going to get it this weekend, but I did read the first issue and I loved the way that they dealt with it.
Yeah. So they did deal with it, that she just has to kind of pick herself up and move on. But she's, you know, she's obviously hurting and she's one of the last survivors of the planet. And of course the Empire is hunting down anyone who survived. But just having her just thinking, you know, just playing the game of what if she was raised by Anakin or what if she was raised by Vader? There is those little books. Vader's Little Princess is one of those books by Jeffrey Brown. And I don't know if you guys have seen it, but, you know, there's these really great things of like her as a little kid, you know, the two buns on the side of her ear, cutting little hearts out of Darth Vader's cape. which makes me just go like, oh, I really wonder if this would happen or something, if Vader would be a good dad. But there's also things like, you know, the Slave Leia outfit, and, you know, Vader's like, you're not going out dressed like that, you know, those type of things. So, you know, I don't know. Like, it would be funny to see if someone was to write something a little bit more detailed about, like, a kind of an alternate reality of Leia if she was raised by someone else. But I think she got most of her, how do I put this, most of her determination and maybe sense of duty, if you will, growing up with Bail and Breha Organa on Alderaan, you know, because Alderaan, you know, has stood as a beacon of hope in the, you know, galaxy for years and years and years until that's why it was chosen to be destroyed. So I think she got a lot of her probably realism and just practical sense of duty from her parents. Instead of, you know, being complaining about San if she was raised by Anakin. It gets everywhere. It's coarse.
It's everywhere. You
know? Exactly. What do we know about her as a senator, Danya?
I'm trying to think back to, like, how much we've seen of her or how much I was thinking came from, like, the expanded universe. It's one of those moments where it's, like, it's so difficult sometimes to disassociate what I know from, like, the expanded universe to, like, what I know now of, like, it's now become legends and stuff. But, you know, like, for example, that she was on a diplomatic mission at the start of A New Hope. So you know that in some ways, even though she is, by all technicalities, a princess, then she is also, you know, a part of the Senate, because you also see, is it Bail in the prequel trilogy as well, is also part of the Senate and gets involved there. So it's mostly thinking about her, because we don't know a lot about what happened between the end of the original trilogy and The Force Awakens. Like, we don't have a lot to fill in the gaps yet, because obviously we don't have any more expanded universe, but it would seem a very kind of logical step that she would take up more of a role within the Senate or within something that kind of would have to rebuild itself after the fall of the Empire. So it was mostly thinking about, like, who she would have been post, like, the original trilogy. Because obviously there's a gap between her being Princess Leia and her being General Leia, because the Resistance wouldn't have come into effect immediately. You know, things like the First Order would have needed time to build up and gain a footing to get to the point of power where they are in The Force Awakens. So it's, I'm actually really looking forward to the book that we're getting, the Claudia Gray book that's coming out.
Yes.
To find out more about her outside of Princess and outside of General and outside of a leader of the Rebel Alliance, because there's a huge gap between those two points that still has a lot to be mined, because, you know, she's a huge political power. You know, she is the sole survivor, or we assume the sole survivor of the Alderaan system. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you guys think or what you guys know.
It's interesting, because speaking of Senator, in the original films, you know, the Emperor dissolved the Imperial Senate before the Death Star was activated, you know, before it was activated. You know, this is the ultimate power in the universe. So she was probably part of the Senate then, but she was captured. And then afterwards, I don't remember where I read it, if it was in Before the Awakening or if it was in one of the visual dictionaries, but it was something about the reason she has the resistance. You know, she's not part of the Republic anymore. The Republic kind of demilitarized, you know, in The Force Awakens, and they kind of let the resistance do their own thing because it's meant to protect it, mainly because Leia was part of the Senate, and she was just this kind of harping voice, like, guys, the First Order is dangerous. Like, constantly kind of saying, like, hey, we have to do something about this. And they never did, so that's when she started the Resistance. And they kind of just, like, I think it's in the Before the Awakening when she recruits Poe. It's kind of put there that, like, they're kind of a branch of the Republic, kind of like a militia almost, but kind of left on their own because they trust them. And they monitor the First Order. But I'm wondering if, like, she just did not have a good experience as a senator because of, you know, basically politics. You know, we see it in the prequels where, you know, it's not a war film anymore. It's more about, you know, political maneuvering and everything. And I think she's just so fed up with that after she sees, you know, what happened in the original trilogy, her family, you know, her whole planet dying. And, action not being taken.
No, I mean, I can totally see her being beyond frustrated. I mean, I feel like it's frustrating to watch the old ones, the prequels. It's so hard coming up with what to call them. The prequels. It's because, like, all the stuff that's going on and all the politics. And I mean, I'm sure for her, it's even more frustrating for all the reasons you said, Mikey.
Yeah, and I almost see some similarities to her and Anakin because of that. You know, in Revenge of the Sith, you know, Anakin's telling, you know, Padme that, you know, they should have one person to go ahead and just make these decisions. You know,
yeah.
Maybe I'm almost wondering if she feels like a dictatorship with the right leader would actually be better than, you know, even though she's been fighting for a republic for forever. You know,
yeah.
What happens to it? Like, look at the Hosnian system was destroyed by the First Order. Why? Because they bickered so much and didn't take the First Order as a real threat. What happened? They're all dead now. So we're back to where we started, you know,
yeah.
30 years later.
That's so interesting you said that, because I was just thinking about that. I was like, you know what? I feel like she has a little bit more of Anakin in her than Padme, even though Padme was the senator. Because I do think that, obviously, I don't think she thinks that it works, the politics.
And with the way that, like, the dark side can creep into politics and be so convincing, I think to have just one strong person, I could see her completely backing that. Because obviously, they didn't learn from any sorts of mistakes if the First Order was able to take over or kind of.
I know. It hasn't been that long, guys.
Yeah. It's like, what are you doing? Don't you remember how bad this was?
I don't know. Well, yeah. And it's like, and it's not like she's the only one from the original trilogy that is there and saying it. You know, you have Admiral Akbar by her side at the Resistance base, and he knows. But, like, these are prominent figures in the original films. Like, you would think they would have some say in the Senate to say, hey, you know, why is the Resistance, why does it have to be a Resistance versus, like, an official Republic military that's keeping the First Order in check? You know, the reason why, like I said, I can't remember where I read it. I wish I can find it. But it was literally like they didn't believe it. So she took it upon herself to create something to kind of keep it in monitor and keep it in check. And it's seen in The Force Awakens that they didn't realize how powerful they had become with Starkiller Base.
They cover that a tiny bit in the Force and the Before the Awakening book when Poe meets Leia.
Okay, see, I've read that, and that's why I said I don't know if it's from there, or if it's also from the visual dictionary, or it might even be from the, because there's an extra scene that I know we'll see when The Force Awakens comes out on Blu-ray, of Leia talking to a senator who was going to the Hosnian system, or maybe she was on the Hosnian system talking to a senator, and then she left, but it was in the book, the Force Awakens novelization, so maybe it even came from that, but it's definitely interesting that, you know, she's fighting for freedom for everyone, which obviously she has a good heart, so she's not falling to the dark side, not doing any of that stuff. But at the same time, she's, like I said, she's more of a realist, and I think that came from her adoptive parents, you know, Bail and Brea Organa. Because even Bail saw when, you know, Order 66 happened, he saw, he's like, this is not right. He knew who the Jedi were. He had his own opinions of them. He didn't, like, take the, you know, he didn't drink the Kool-Aid and believe that the Jedi betrayed the Republic. You know, so he went and saved, you know, Obi-Wan and Yoda. You know, he picked them up, and we see Bail and Alderaan obviously fight with the rebels from the early on in both the TV show, and obviously they were on a diplomatic mission from Alderaan, which were smuggling the, you know, the Death Star plan. So hopefully we'll see more about Alderaan and maybe even her parents in Rogue One even.
Yeah, so I was looking a little bit into where I saw about Leia being a senator in the New Republic, because I swore that I'd seen something somewhere that said that. And it is actually from the excerpt from Star Wars Bloodline. So she does become a senator post the original trilogy. And the person that you were talking about, that she was talking to in that deleted scene, that's Corsella. That's her... she's her commander, her personal envoy. And when you see, when they go to Hosnian Prime and you see that girl on the sort of balcony looking out and looking like horrified, that's Corsella. That's Leia's personal envoy. So that's who she sends as her representative to the Senate, because so many of them kind of have it out for Leia. So, yeah, that's why we see her. And that's, yeah, it was a deleted scene. But that's why they focused on that person when you get to Hosnian Prime, when they're blowing up the Hosnian system. So... if anyone was wondering why they specifically focused on that character, that's why.
And so that's why I knew just that snippet of it, because it's from the chapter that was released in USA Today. I read it online from Bloodline. That's what it was. So we'll get more when that book is released about Leia and her experiences before, I guess, as a senator.
Yeah.
So, what about her as the general? You know, obviously, Lorsan Tekka in The Force Awakens says to Poe, you know, Poe says, I have to get this back to the general, and he says, she'll always be a princess to me. Obviously, she is made, by the time The Force Awakens is around, she is no longer a senator, no longer refers to herself as a princess. And I will say, in the novelization of the book, Poe kind of goes into this self kind of thought that I can't imagine anyone calling her princess, because she would not like that anymore. You know, like, because her plan is destroyed, like, she doesn't want to be called princess, at least in the novelization of The Force Awakens. What do you guys think, you know, of her as a general, besides being just a strong female character in a phenomenal franchise?
I think it's fitting. I mean, we saw her giving orders and strategizing in the original trilogy, so I think that to make it official is just the next step for her, and I'm really glad to see her with a title such as general, because yes, princess is important, but I think that she was born with that title, whereas she earned the title of general, and I think to me, that holds much more weight.
I almost feel the title general is kind of like Chewbacca not getting a medal at the end of A New Hope. You know, Han got the title of general, and so did Lando get the title of general 30 years before in Return of the Jedi. And so it's finally, it's like one of those things where it's like, all right, we're finally going to give Leia the ability to become a general now. I think it's just been a long time coming, just because, like you said, she was strategizing in the, she was a critical part in all the original, in the original films. And she was always looked upon as a leader. Even at A New Hope, even though she was still a princess, you know, she was the one who presented the medals to Luke and Han for destroying the Death Star, for being that critical moment there. So I think it's just been a long time coming for her to become, get that title.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, more than anyone, she has been a leader for the longest time. So being able to give her a title befitting that within the Resistance and even before that within the Rebel Alliance. Like, she was the leader, pretty much. Everyone turned to her, everyone looked to her. Like, she really held those groups together for a lot of it. So to see her...
She's also... Sorry, keep going.
No, that's fine. You go.
Just what you were saying, I think that she's also, of the trio, she was the one constant. You know, like, Luke and Han, they go off and do, well, Han. But, like, you know, sometimes Luke has to go off and do his Jedi things. But, like, Leia, like you said, she was always the leader, and she was always there with the rebels, and now she's the leader of the resistance, so.
Yeah, she was always duty-bound, which, you know, it speaks to her character, you know. It's a strength, you know, she always did duty, you know, did her duty before anything else. So that's really interesting, because as a general, as a leader nonstop, we don't see anything with her using her force powers. We know she can sense things. She felt it when Han was struck down. I'm going to put it as nice way as possible. But, you know, we don't really know anything, because in the extended universe, Luke did train her. She did get a lightsaber. She wasn't really a Jedi because she did all her political duties and stuff. But in the new universe, we see her as a general. We don't see her move on and train or anything like that, because she doesn't even know where her brother is. What do you guys think about that? You know, are we going to explore more of her force sensitivity in these films?
I hope so, because I just feel like it's super unrealistic to think that she would never, someone like her wouldn't be curious to explore, like, her force powers. Like, even if she doesn't get to get trained as a Jedi, I think she would at least be like, hey, Luke, like, let's try some stuff out.
Yeah, like, who wouldn't want to lift stuff with their mind? Like, that's, yeah. You know, because she's seen it. Like, she saw it happen in the Ewok village with Luke and everything. Like, if you knew you had that power in you, would you just let it go by, like, for 30 years?
Exactly. And not Leia. She's, like, a go-getter. She would want to know.
It'd be, like, 2 weekends a year, you know, 2 weekends a month, you know, for you. She'd be in the Jedi Reserves or something like that.
I mean, I'd also question if she would be able to let it go. Like, maybe it had started manifesting when we saw it, but do we know what happens to people? Maybe if they ignore that and then just don't try to train themselves and just kind of try to let it go. I don't think anybody's ever done that. So I can't see it as something that she would even be able to let go if she wanted to.
Well, you know, and that's where it's like, you know, the reason I kept bringing back her sense of duty and stuff like that is I almost wonder if she didn't do anything about it because she felt such a strong sense of duty to the New Republic, because she was a leader all the way through the rebellion. And then she starts a family, and then her son goes off on a, you know, killing rampage. And then she says something's wrong here and she starts the resistance. Like, I feel like maybe she never followed that because of her sense of duty and everything else. I don't think anything would happen. I feel like, you know, force sensitivity, you know, it's something that's always with you. So maybe it's something like someone who's a really good artist, they just don't do anything with their gift. But, you know, at one point, though, in Return of the Jedi, she tells Luke before, you know, he goes to confront Vader that, she, you know, he has a power she can never know. You know, she couldn't even possibly imagine having it. And then that's when he reveals that, he it's strong in his family. His father had it. He has it. And then, of course, his sister, when we learn that Leia is his sister. So I almost wonder if she is curious, but she just, there's too many things, like, it's like, oh, I'll get to it, and just never gets to it.
But then who's to say that that needs to manifest in having to become a Jedi and having to use it in the same way that Luke uses his Jedi powers, and how we saw everyone involved in the Jedi Academy and the Jedi Masters prior to this, like, and how they use it. You know, we know that she has some gift of being able to sense things, because we see that in The Force Awakens. She knows, or we are led to believe, that she almost immediately senses the fact that something has happened on Starkiller Base with Han. When she sinks against, is it against the console she sinks, or does she sit down? They cut to a scene with her, I'm pretty sure.
They cut to a scene with her, and until I get a copy of it to watch over and over and over again, my 6 times in theaters is not enough to be able to tell you exactly what it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do remember them cutting to her.
So what she senses in that moment, we don't know exactly, but I would assume that it would be something that she sensed through the Force. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it needs to manifest in the same way that we've seen everyone else using their Force powers. Like, we know that there are other ways to use the Force, you know, with being able to use mind tricks, for example. Like, is there a way that we already know that she's a gifted diplomat? We know that she's really good with public speaking and, you know, that sort of thing. Like, is that something that would she be able to use the Force to be able to amplify that, for example? Like, is there.
Are you saying she's hypnotizing her audience?
Not hypnotizing necessarily, but being able to give it. Like, being able to put more behind it in order to
inspire them more, you know?
Yeah.
So there's actually, and you know, this would not be something that would surprise me, just because, like, in the extended universe, there are, like, abilities called, like, Jedi Battle Meditation, and that was known as, it was a unique ability that certain Jedi had that was able to inspire, you know, courage and you know, all the people going into battle. And so one person who had the ability to, you know, influence all the people on their side, it would turn the tide of a war or a fight, even if they were overwhelmed. So it wouldn't surprise me if Leia had the ability to do something like that. But what really gets me is we do see her respond to Han's death in The Force Awakens. But you got to remember, in A New Hope, when the entire planet of Alderaan was destroyed, we didn't see her react. We didn't even see Luke react. And we both know that they had the Force power. And it was only Obi-Wan who felt millions of lives cry out and then suddenly stop. You know, is it something where maybe Obi-Wan is just has to be trained to be able to feel it? Or the, you know, I just don't know how much she could have picked up if both these two, you know, Luke and Leia are just so powerful in the Force and they didn't feel the destruction of Alderaan. You know, we didn't see that in A New Hope.
But in the same sense, we see it in Rey, for example, and we see it with Luke a little bit as well, is that until their Force abilities have, like, awakened, they're not innately able to sense that within themselves. So without Leia actually knowing or having it pointed out to her, would she be able to tap into that at that point? Like, it's much later in the original trilogy before she learns her true lineage. So, you know, there's also that sort of sense of, do you need to be aware of it or made aware of it before you can use it?
Maybe she did feel it, but she just already felt, like, so terrible.
Yeah. That it, like, and I would
just make a difference.
I would also say that for the situation that she was in, would she really have time to be able to mourn at that point? Like, she has such a huge responsibility in respect to keeping the Rebel Alliance safe and keeping the plans away from the Empire, that she has a much greater responsibility in that moment than allowing herself to mourn. So even if she did feel it, would she allow them to have that power over her?
Yeah, well, I think in the end, I really want to explore both Maz and Leia. I really want them to be explored because we know both characters have Force sensitivity, but they're not Jedi. So wonder what, you know, how they would be portrayed in future films and books and other media. But it's definitely something to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I'm really fascinated in, is learning more about the Force outside of just the Jedi and how we see it portrayed in respect to, you know, being, like, gifted with a lightsaber and I would assume channeling it through that and also channeling it through, like, the Force pushes and so on and so forth. And it would just be interesting to see it in other applications, like a wider variety of being able to tap into the Force and use it outside of what we know of the Jedi. Like, that's something I really want to see explored, because it's something that's really interesting. Like, it's this whole, like, so many people, we assume, like, it can't just be a bloodline thing in respect to being strong with the Force, because at one point there were so many Jedi that it couldn't just be coming from certain family lines. It had to be manifesting in different people in different ways. But surely not all of them would want to be Jedi. That lifestyle, that philosophy, that everything wouldn't be for everyone. So there has to be other ways to, like, implement and use your Force abilities. There has to be.
I've never really thought of that, Danya, but you're so right. I'm sure a lot of people who have the Force don't want to become, like, monks. Like, you're probably right.
But you gotta remember, a lot of the Jedi, they were taken or given to the Jedi Order as infants and really young. Remember, Anakin Skywalker, at age of 9, was too old. He was denied training. And it was only up until Qui-Gon's death that he made Obi-Wan promise. And then the Council agreed to fulfill Qui-Gon's last promise, you know, last request to train him. So, you know, it's one of those things where the Padawans and stuff don't know their family. We see this in Clone Wars. We see this, you know, in lots of the other media that came out, that the, you know, the Padawans and Jedi don't know their family. They're separated because that attachment leads them to the dark side, which we saw with Anakin.
But then you also
and Ben,
assume
that, stupid Ben.
Yeah. I know.
But then you also have to assume that all families would want to give their children up to the Jedi Order. But I would argue that not all families might want to do that, regardless of whether or not their child was Force sensitive.
No, I agree. And I almost want to have a whole episode dedicated to this, because remember, Qui-Gon mentions to Anakin's mother that if he was born in the Republic, we would have identified him and started his training much sooner. You know, do the Jedi just take, you know, identify Force-sensitive kids and steal them in the middle of the night? Are they really maybe they're a corrupt society and not
maybe
really
they
the
do.
Guardians of Peace. Maybe they're not Guardians of Peace. Maybe Anakin actually didn't turn to the dark side and he just saw the truth. You know, who knows?
They're like, for the greater good, we'll steal children from their mothers. But I think it's, I would really, like you said, I would really like to see her Force explored more in the next film, but I would particularly like to see that explored in relationship to her relationship with Luke, because that was such a huge bomb that was dropped, like, in the last movie, and we never really got to have resolution on that. And I feel like a little bit, like, her emotional arc got gypped a little bit, because she had just as many issues, well, she had more issues, I feel like, with Vader than even Luke did. And we never really got to explore that. And now she's got all these issues with Luke. He left her, so they better hash this out.
Yeah, there's got to be something there. But I do want to move on to the last bit of information we have written down here, guys. So I don't know who wrote this. Who wants to see Leia with a pink lightsaber?
That was me.
I would be down. Let's make it happen.
I would be down with a pink lightsaber. I personally thought she'd have, like, a blue one, you know. But I could see a pink one for her.
She should get her own special one. Like, Mace Windu had his purple one. She should have her own special one.
Well, maybe she can have purple, too. All right. Anything else about Leia, guys?
She's Rey's mom. That's all I'm saying.
What?
Ariana has different theories to you, Mikey.
We all know
Don't worry,
that
I've
Rey,
gone into we, them in depth.
We all I wrote know an that Rey. Article. We all know Rey is Luke's daughter.
Oh, not, God, not, here we go.
Okay. Well, you can think that's good that you think that, because then when they drop the bomb, it'll surprise you, and then you'll be shocked.
I think Mark Hamill at some point said, you know, she's like a daughter to me. You know, talking about Daisy. You know, just something like that. Just give an illusion there.
Hold on. Hold on.
He did say that, but he clarified it's because she's the same age as his actual daughter.
Yes.
No, that's Rey.
You can't fool us. No, that was for anyone who isn't aware of what we're talking about. Mark Hamill did a talk recently at the Oxford Union, and he was talking about how he can sort of relate to Daisy. And he said that he relates to her like
like a daughter because she's the same age as his daughter. And people in the audience were like, ah, and he was like, well, no, I didn't say anything kind of thing. But it's actually a really cool Q&A session at the Oxford Union. It's about an hour long, but it's so good. If you're interested in Mark Hamill at all, then you should listen to it, because I think I've listened to it about 2 times this week already, so that's a problem. I'll link it in the show notes, guys.
All right. So thank you, everyone, for listening to our weekly topic of Leia. As always, my name is Mikey.
I'm Danya.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Mariana.
Thank you all for listening, and you guys have a wonderful week.
See you next week, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.